Hello and welcome to the Inquiring Minds podcast, where we dive deep into the latest cutting-edge research. I'm Tom, and with me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hi there. Today we're going to be exploring a fascinating study that delves into the realm of personal finance and decision-making. The paper is titled Optimal Consumption Under Loss-Averse Multiplicative Habit Formation Preferences, and it was authored by Barman Angoshtari, Shang Yu, and Feng Yuan.
This is a really intriguing topic, Jen. The researchers are looking at how people's consumption habits and loss aversion can influence their optimal investment and spending strategies over the long term. It's about finding that delicate balance between current enjoyment and future stability.
Exactly, Tom. Traditionally, economists have modeled consumer behavior using time-separable preferences, where each period's consumption is evaluated independently. But we know that's not how real people actually make decisions. Our past spending habits and aversion to losses play a big role in shaping our current choices.
That's right. The authors of this paper are tackling a more realistic and psychologically grounded model of consumer preferences. They focus on a specific type called multiplicative habit formation, where people derive utility not just from their current consumption, but from how it compares to their past spending habits.
Fascinating. So unlike the classic linear habit formation models, which impose a strict constraint that consumption can't fall below a certain subsistence level, the multiplicative approach allows for more flexibility. Consumers can strategically budget their spending below their habit level when necessary.
Absolutely, but the key innovation here is that the researchers are taking this multiplicative habit formation framework and layering on loss aversion. They propose an S-shaped utility function that captures people's tendency to feel the pain of losses more acutely than the pleasure of gains.
That's a really important twist. Previous work has shown that standard utility functions, even with habit formation, fail to fully capture people's real-world risk attitudes. Incorporating loss aversion is a major step forward in developing more psychologically realistic models of consumer behavior.
Definitely. So what did the researchers find when they tackled this problem? How did incorporating loss aversion into the multiplicative habit formation framework change the optimal consumption and investment strategies?
Well, the authors conducted a detailed analysis of the resulting Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman HJB equation that characterizes the optimal policies. By studying the properties of the solution to a related nonlinear free boundary problem, they were able to derive the optimal consumption and investment decisions in feedback form.
That sounds pretty technical. Can you break that down for our listeners in a more accessible way?
Sure. Let me try to explain it more intuitively. Essentially, the researchers had to grapple with the complexities introduced by the S-shaped utility function and the path-dependent nature of the multiplicative habit formation process. They couldn't rely on the same mathematical tricks that work for simpler linear habit models.
Oh, I see. So they had to develop some new analytical techniques to tackle this more nuanced problem. What were some of the key insights they uncovered?
One important finding is that the optimal policies under loss-averse multiplicative habit formation can exhibit very different behavior compared to the standard case without loss aversion. For example, the agent may become more conservative in their consumption and investment choices when facing the threat of falling below their habit level.
That makes a lot of sense. The pain of losing ground relative to their past spending patterns would loom much larger than the joy of exceeding it. So they'd be more inclined to play it safe.
Exactly. The researchers also found that the specific shape of the S-shaped utility function can have a big impact on the optimal strategies. They analyzed several commonly used functional forms and provided illustrative numerical examples to demonstrate how the policies vary.
Fascinating. It really highlights how important it is to get the preference modeling right when studying consumer financial decision-making. Small differences in the underlying utility function can lead to vastly different predicted behaviors.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this paper so valuable. By incorporating loss aversion into the multiplicative habit formation framework, the authors have developed a richer, more realistic model that can better capture the nuances of how people actually make consumption and investment choices in the real world.
This is such an important advancement. So often, economic models make simplifying assumptions that don't align with human psychology. But research like this is pushing the boundaries, giving us a deeper, more accurate understanding of financial decision-making.
Definitely. And the implications extend well beyond just academic curiosity. Armed with these insights, policymakers and financial institutions could design better products and interventions to help people achieve their long-term savings and spending goals, especially during challenging economic times.
That's a great point. This research could have a real, tangible impact on people's lives. By recognizing the role of loss aversion and habit formation, we can craft policies and financial tools that are more in tune with how individuals actually think and behave.
Absolutely. This is the kind of work that really gets me excited about the power of economic research to improve people's financial well-being. The authors have made a significant contribution by expanding the theoretical toolkit and highlighting the importance of psychological factors in consumer decision-making.
Well said, Jen. This has been a fascinating deep dive into some cutting-edge research. I'm really glad we had the chance to explore this paper in depth and unpack its key insights and implications. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this journey as much as we have.
Me too, Tom. It's always a pleasure to delve into thought-provoking work like this and share it with our audience. Personal finance is such a critical topic, and studies that enhance our understanding of human behavior in this domain can have a real impact. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Absolutely. Until next time, keep inquiring and stay curious. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of feeling trapped by your own spending habits? Constantly struggling to keep up with that ever-growing lifestyle inflation? Well, have we got the solution for you?
Introducing Habit Breakers, the revolutionary new app that uses cutting-edge behavioral economics to free you from the shackles of loss aversion and multiplicative habit formation.
That's right, folks. Our team of PhD-wielding finance ninjas have cracked the code on optimal consumption strategies. No more agonizing over every purchase, wondering if it will throw your delicate balance out of whack.
With Habit Breakers, you can finally enjoy your hard-earned money without the nagging guilt. Our patented habit recalibration algorithm will gently guide you to a healthier, more flexible spending pattern. It's like having a financial therapist in your pocket.
But wait, there's more. Sign up today and we'll throw in a free copy of our best-selling ebook, Conquering the S-Curve: How to Retrain Your Brain for Effortless Budgeting. That's a $29.99 value. Yours, absolutely free.
So what are you waiting for? Download Habit Breakers now and start living your best, most financially unburdened life. No more keeping up with the Joneses. It's time to leave them in the dust.
Habit Breakers. Breaking the chains of your past, one purchase at a time. Get it on the App Store or Google Play today.
Here is the podcast episode transcript.
Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest cutting-edge research and unpack its real-world significance. I'm Jen, joined as always by my co-host Tom.
Hey there, everyone. Today we're excited to discuss a fascinating paper that explores some surprising and counterintuitive properties of a voting method used around the world, the single transferable vote, or STV for short.
The paper is titled Single Transferable Vote and Paradoxes of Negative and Positive Involvement, and it's authored by David McCune from William Jewell College. Now, the title alone is enough to pique my interest. Paradoxes involving voting methods? Sign me up.
Absolutely. STV is used for political elections in many places, like Australia, Ireland, and Scottish local government. And as the researchers show, this seemingly straightforward voting system can actually lead to some pretty bizarre outcomes under certain circumstances.
That's right. The core idea here is that STV can exhibit what the authors call paradoxes of negative and positive involvement. In other words, a candidate who loses an election could actually become a winner if more of their non-supporters participated, or a winning candidate could become a loser if more of their supporters turned out to vote. Isn't that just wild?
It really is. The researchers provide a theoretical analysis to understand the worst-case scenarios for these kinds of paradoxes under STV. But they also dig into real-world examples from Scottish local elections, which I think is where the story gets truly fascinating.
Yes, the empirical analysis is so compelling. The authors found nearly 100 elections in Scotland that demonstrated these involvement paradoxes. And some of the examples they describe are just mind-bending.
For instance, they talk about a ward election where the eventual winner, Pews, actually lost the original election. But when the researchers added a few hundred ballots that ranked Pews last, Pews ended up winning. It's counterintuitive that increasing the turnout of a candidate's opponents could make that candidate the victor.
That's just crazy. And they found an even more extreme example, where a candidate named White went from finishing sixth in the original election all the way up to second place after the researchers added some strategic ballots. White went from near the bottom to almost winning, just by incorporating a relatively small number of additional votes.
Exactly. These examples really illustrate the underlying mathematical instability and irrationality baked into the STV voting method. The researchers show how you can make systematic tweaks to the ballots and produce wildly different electoral outcomes. It calls into question whether STV is as reasonable and fair as we might assume.
Definitely. And the implications go beyond just these specific elections. The authors argue that analyzing involvement paradoxes is a way to evaluate the general reasonableness of a voting method. If a system can produce such absurd results when you perturb the input data, even in a hypothetical sense, then maybe there are deeper issues with the method's design.
Absolutely. The paper doesn't just catalog these paradoxes, but uses them as a lens to critically examine the foundations of STV. And the fact that they found nearly 100 real-world examples in their dataset, that's a pretty alarming rate of these paradoxical outcomes occurring in practice.
Absolutely. This is a great example of how rigorous mathematical and empirical analysis can uncover surprising and counterintuitive properties of real-world systems. The researchers didn't just accept STV as a reasonable voting method. They dug deeper and found some profound flaws in how it functions.
Definitely. And I think this podcast episode really highlights the value of this kind of deep dive, expert analysis. By blending the theoretical and the empirical, and using compelling storytelling to bring the research to life, we can illuminate these cutting-edge discoveries in a way that's engaging and accessible.
Couldn't agree more. This paper is a great example of why we do this podcast, to shine a light on fascinating research that has important real-world implications, but might otherwise fly under the radar. Single transferable vote is used in so many political elections globally, and now we have a much richer understanding of its paradoxical properties.
Absolutely. This was a really eye-opening discussion, and I'm sure our listeners are as fascinated by these findings as we are. Voting methods and electoral systems are such a critical part of the democratic process, so it's crucial that we understand their strengths and limitations.
Couldn't agree more. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time as we explore more cutting-edge research. This is Jen.
Dot and Tom, signing off. Catch you later. Are you tired of your vote being undermined by paradoxical voting systems? Introducing
Paradox-proof ballots.
Paradox-proof ballots are the solution to the madness of single transferable vote and other flawed electoral methods. Our patented technology ensures your vote is counted exactly as intended, no matter how many of your opponents try to interfere.
That's right. With paradox-proof ballots, you can rest easy knowing your voice will be heard. No more watching in horror as your preferred candidate gets bumped down the rankings, or as a last-place loser somehow surges to victory.
Paradox-proof ballots use a cutting-edge algorithm that's mathematically guaranteed to be immune to all known involvement paradoxes. Your vote will always reflect your true preferences, no matter how the turnout fluctuates.
So don't let your vote get paradoxed. Switch to paradox-proof ballots today. Available now at your local election office, or order online at paradoxproofballots.com.
Paradox-proof ballots, the future of fair, rational elections is here.
Paradox-proof ballots. Vote with confidence.
Welcome to Quantum Quarterly, the award-winning podcast that investigates cutting-edge research with intrigue and depth. I'm Tom, here with my co-host Jen.
Today, we're diving into a fascinating paper that explores the role of information entropy in the dynamics of financial markets. The title of the study is Information Entropy of the Financial Market, Modeling Random Processes Using Open Quantum Systems.
This paper presents a unique approach to understanding the seemingly random evolution of traded asset prices. By applying the framework of open quantum systems, the researchers aim to shed light on how information entropy impacts the time evolution of financial market dynamics.
The key question they're exploring is, how can we better model the gradual loss of information about future market prices beyond just looking at factors like volatility and variance? Let's dive in and unpack their findings.
The paper starts by highlighting an important point. Even though we often model financial markets using probabilistic methods, the underlying price changes are not truly random. There are real factors, like company performance or macroeconomic conditions, that drive those price movements.
Exactly. The reason we turn to probability is because we lack perfect information about the future. And that's where the concept of information entropy comes into play. The authors argue that tracking the gradual loss of information as we model further into the future is crucial for understanding market dynamics.
To explore this, the researchers propose using the Open Quantum Systems framework. This allows them to represent the market as a quantum system that interacts with its external environment. By modeling this interaction, they can study how information entropy evolves over time.
The key innovation is the way they set up the Hilbert space representation of the market. They define the full system as a tensor product of the market space and an environment space. The environment space is crucial, as it captures factors like market risk appetite that influence price movements.
Right. The environment space has two components: a finite dimensional space representing different levels of risk appetite, and a continuous space that ensures the system Hamiltonian returns a continuous energy spectrum. This allows them to model the energy gained or lost as the environment shifts between risk on and risk off states.
Fascinating. So by modeling the market as an open quantum system that interacts with this environment, they can track how information is gradually lost over time. Can you walk us through the general framework they use to derive the master equation governing the market's time evolution?
Sure, let's dig into the details. The researchers start by defining the key operators that will govern the dynamics. There's the interaction Hamiltonian, HI, which models the back and forth between the market and its environment. This includes operators like O and AD, which shift the market to higher or lower risk appetite states.
And they also introduce the concept of interaction picture operators, which allow them to simplify the calculations when deriving the master equation. Can you explain a bit more about how they use these interaction picture operators?
Absolutely. The interaction picture operators, like AI, T, represent the operators in the Schrödinger picture, but with the environmental Hamiltonian dynamics factored out. This makes it easier to apply the strong coupling limit, which is a key step in arriving at the final Markovian master equation.
Got it. So by moving to the interaction picture, they're able to isolate the dynamics driven by the interaction Hamiltonian, HI, rather than having to deal with the full system Hamiltonian. That's a really clever technique.
Exactly. And once they've established this framework, they're able to derive the general form of the master equation governing the time evolution of the reduced market density matrix. This master equation includes both Gaussian and non-Gaussian contributions, depending on the state of the environment.
Fascinating. So they're able to capture both the classical diffusion type dynamics, as well as more complex non-classical behaviors that arise from the interaction with the environment. Can you walk us through some of the key results they obtain?
Sure. Let's start with the Gaussian case. The researchers show that if the market starts in a classical, diagonal state, and the environment remains in a thermal equilibrium state, then the market state will remain diagonal. This means the dynamics reduce to a simple classical diffusion, just like in standard stochastic models.
Interesting. So even in this quantum framework, they're able to recover the classical diffusion results, as long as the market and environment states have certain properties. But I imagine the real power of their approach comes from the non-Gaussian extensions they explore. Right?
Absolutely. That's where things get really intriguing. The researchers consider two main non-Gaussian extensions. First, they allow the environment state to have non-diagonal, or non-commutative, elements. This introduces additional non-Gaussian terms into the master equation that impact the higher moments of the price distribution.
I see. So even if the initial market state is classical, these non-commutative environment interactions can drive the market state to become non-classical over time. That must lead to some fascinating dynamics.
Exactly. The key insight is that two market states can have the same initial probability distribution for the price, but different levels of von Neumann entropy. And this entropy difference manifests in the higher moments of the price process, like the kurtosis.
Wow. That's really powerful. It means the quantum approach can capture nuances in the statistical properties of the price dynamics that would be missed by classical models focused solely on the variance. What about the second non-Gaussian extension they explore?
In the second extension, the researchers introduce a more general form for the market response operators, O and AD. Instead of just shifting the price by a fixed amount, they allow for a probability distribution of possible price jumps. This introduces additional non-Gaussian terms that depend on the off-diagonal elements of the market density matrix.
Fascinating. So by relaxing the assumptions about the market response, they're able to generate even richer, more complex dynamics that go beyond simple diffusion. And the key is that all of this complexity emerges from the interaction between the market and its environment, as captured by the Open Quantum Systems Framework.
Exactly. The researchers show through numerical simulations that this non-local market response, combined with the non-commutative environment interactions, can lead to some striking results. For example, they demonstrate an inverse relationship between the entropy gain over the simulation and the excess kurtosis of the price process.
That's a really intriguing finding. It suggests that the degree of information loss, as measured by the entropy gain, is directly linked to the higher-order statistical properties of the price dynamics. I can see how this could have important implications for how we model and understand financial market behavior.
Absolutely. The authors argue that this open quantum systems approach provides a more flexible framework for modeling the random evolution of financial prices, compared to classical stochastic models. By capturing the role of information entropy, they're able to uncover rich, non-classical dynamics that wouldn't be apparent otherwise.
This is a really fascinating paper. It's amazing to see how the tools of quantum theory can shed new light on the seemingly random processes underlying financial markets. The authors have demonstrated the power of this open quantum systems approach, and I'm excited to see how it might be applied and extended in future research.
Me too. This is cutting-edge work that challenges some of the core assumptions in traditional financial modeling. By embracing the role of information and entropy, the researchers have opened up new avenues for understanding the complex, dynamic nature of financial markets. It's a great example of how interdisciplinary approaches can yield important insights.
Definitely. I think this paper will spark a lot of interesting discussions and further research in this area. The combination of rigorous quantum theory, financial modeling, and a focus on information dynamics is truly unique. It's a great reminder that there's still so much to discover about the fundamental nature of financial markets.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for joining us on Quantum Quarterly. Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for more fascinating explorations of the latest scientific breakthroughs. Until next time.
See you next time.
Are you tired of the unpredictable ups and downs of the stock market? Frustrated by the seemingly random nature of financial prices? Well, have we got the solution for you?
Introducing Quantum Portfolios, the first investment firm built on the principles of open quantum systems and information entropy. Using the groundbreaking research featured on our podcast, we've cracked the code of financial markets.
With Quantum Portfolios, you'll never have to worry about volatility or unpredictable price swings again. We harness the power of quantum mechanics to model the flow of information and entropy, giving us unparalleled insight into future market movements.
That's right, folks. Our portfolio managers are quantum physicists, not Wall Street suits. We don't rely on outdated statistical models or gut instincts. We've got the equations to back it up.
Invest with quantum portfolios and watch your wealth grow in ways you never thought possible. It's like having a crystal ball for the markets, but without all the glitz and glamour.
So why settle for mundane returns when you can quantum leap your way to financial freedom? Visit quantumportfolios.com and let us show you the future of investing. Quantum Portfolios, the uncertainty is certain.
Quantum Portfolios, where the only thing random is your competition. Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest cutting-edge research and bring it to life through expert analysis and compelling storytelling. I'm Tom, and joining me today is my co-host, Jen.
Hello, everyone. We're excited to explore a fascinating new paper that investigates the international spillovers of the European Central Bank's monetary policy on non-ERM2 EU countries. The title of the paper is Non-Linearities in International Spillovers of the ECB's Monetary Policy, the Case of Non-ERM2 Countries and Anti-Fragmentation Policy.
This is a really intriguing study that delves into an important topic, how monetary policy decisions made in one country or region can have ripple effects across borders. The researchers, led by Ioannis Kalonymos-Holbin from McGill University, set out to uncover the presence of sign and size non-linearities in these international spillovers.
That's right, Tom. The paper focuses on the impacts of the ECB's policies on EU countries that are not part of the European Exchange Rate Mechanism, or ERM2. These are countries within the EU, but outside the Eurozone, with freely floating currencies. The researchers wanted to understand how the ECB's actions, including its anti-fragmentation efforts, affected these non-ERM2 economies.
To do this, the researchers first identified three distinct types of monetary policy shocks using a clever method developed by Finelli and Marcy. They extracted a pure monetary policy shock, which represents the direct impact of changing borrowing costs. They also identified an information shock, which captures the information about the economy that can be inferred from the ECB's policy decisions. And lastly, they isolated a spread shock, which they attribute to the ECB's anti-fragmentation policies.
Fascinating. By breaking down the ECB's actions into these three components, the researchers were able to really dive into the nuances of how monetary policy impacts these neighboring economies. And as you mentioned, they were particularly interested in exploring whether these effects exhibited any non-linear patterns.
Exactly. The researchers hypothesized that the prolonged period of near-zero interest rates in the Eurozone since 2012 could lead to nonlinear behaviors in how the ECB's policies get transmitted internationally. They wanted to see if the size or the sign of the shocks mattered in terms of the ultimate impacts on variables like exchange rates, unemployment, inflation, industrial production, and long-term interest rates.
To investigate this, they used a sophisticated econometric approach called local projections. This allowed them to estimate both linear and nonlinear impulse response functions, which trace out how the variables of interest respond over time to these different monetary policy shocks.
The key innovation was that they incorporated nonlinear transformations of the shocks to disentangle sign effects from size effects. As the researchers explain, an odd function like the absolute value will isolate sign nonlinearities, while an even function that separates small and large shocks can uncover size nonlinearities.
That's a really clever way to tease apart these different types of nonlinearities. It reminds me of how researchers in other fields, like psychology, will use contrasting experimental conditions to isolate the effects of different factors.
Absolutely. And when they implemented this approach, the researchers found some fascinating results. For the linear model, they estimated significant impacts of the pure monetary policy shock on nominal variables like the exchange rate, inflation, and long-term interest rates. The spread shock, which captures the ECB's anti-fragmentation efforts, also had large effects on real variables like unemployment and industrial production.
But the real insights came when they looked at the non-linear specifications. Compared to the linear model, the sine-effect non-linear model estimated much stronger responses of the long-term interest rate to monetary policy shocks, the unemployment rate to information shocks, and variables like the exchange rate, inflation, and industrial production to the spread shocks.
That's really striking. It suggests that by ignoring potential non-linearities, the linear model was actually underestimating the potency of these policy spillovers. The sine effects seem to be playing a big role in how the ECB's actions get transmitted internationally.
Exactly. And when the researchers formally tested for the presence of non-linearities, they found highly significant evidence of sine effects across most of the variables and shock types. The evidence for size non-linearities was much weaker in comparison.
That's a fascinating finding. It implies that what really matters is whether the monetary policy shock is positive or negative, rather than the magnitude of the shock. The impacts seem to depend critically on the direction of the policy change.
Definitely. And the researchers went even further, estimating conditional impulse response functions to really bring this sine non-linearity to life. They looked at how the responses differed depending on whether the shock was positive or negative, and whether the initial conditions were above or below zero.
That's a great approach. It allows them to paint a much richer picture of how these international spillovers play out. For example, they found that a positive monetary policy shock has a large negative effect on the real exchange rate, while a negative shock has a more muted impact.
Exactly. And for the information shock, they found that if the economy was initially in a weak state, a positive information shock, signaling an overheating economy, had a much more substantial impact on unemployment compared to negative shocks.
Wow, that's a really nuanced and policy-relevant finding. It suggests that the ECB's communication about the state of the economy can have asymmetric effects on neighboring countries, depending on their underlying conditions.
Absolutely. This study is a great example of how rigorous econometric analysis, combined with careful attention to potential non-linearities, can uncover important insights that wouldn't be evident from a linear model. It really highlights the value of going beyond simple averages and looking at the full richness of how policies propagate across borders.
Definitely, this is such an impressive piece of research. The researchers have not only identified these fascinating nonlinear patterns, but they've also provided a clear framework for understanding the mechanisms at play. It's a great contribution to our knowledge of international monetary policy spillovers.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This is the kind of work that really pushes the boundaries of our understanding and has meaningful real-world implications. As policymakers grapple with the complex dynamics of an interconnected global economy, studies like this can help guide more effective and nuanced decision-making.
Absolutely. And for listeners, I think the key takeaways here are that monetary policy decisions, even in one country, can have significant ripple effects across borders. But those effects aren't always linear or straightforward. There can be important sign-based and size-based non-linearities that shape how policies get transmitted internationally.
Exactly. Understanding and accounting for these non-linearities is crucial for policymakers who want to anticipate and manage the cross-border impacts of their actions. This is a great example of how cutting-edge research can illuminate the nuances of economic phenomena that might otherwise be missed.
Well said, Jen. This has been a truly fascinating dive into an important and thought-provoking piece of research. I'm sure our listeners are as eager as we are to see what other insights emerge from this line of inquiry. Thanks for joining me today. This was a great conversation.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure to explore these kinds of high-impact studies with you. I'm sure our listeners have gained a deeper appreciation for the complexities of international monetary policy spillovers. We'll be back soon with more captivating research to unpack. Until then, keep exploring the world of science with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Are your nonlinear international money troubles getting you down?
Tired of asymmetric shocks and sine effects wreaking havoc on your portfolio?
Introducing Nonlinear Global Finance. The one-stop shop for all your strange economic spillover needs.
Our team of crack econometricians will analyze your assets, identify hidden non-linearities, and develop a custom anti-fragmentation strategy to protect your wealth.
With Nonlinear Global Finance, you'll be insulated from information shocks, spread shocks, and everything in between.
Don't let monetary policy decisions from across the globe catch you off guard. Let us apply our sophisticated local projection techniques to keep your finances stable.
Nonlinear Global Finance, taming the chaos of the interconnected world, one portfolio at a time.
Call 1-800-IMPULSE-RESPONSE to schedule your free consultation today.
Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest groundbreaking research. I'm Tom, and with me is my co-host, Jen.
Hello, everyone. Today, we'll be discussing a fascinating paper titled Stock Volume Forecasting with Advanced Information by Conditional Variational Autoencoder, authored by Pali R. Yang and Alexander Y. Shostopoulos.
This paper tackles a crucial challenge in finance: accurately forecasting stock trading volume, which has important implications for derivative pricing and investment strategies.
The researchers propose using a conditional variational autoencoder, CVAE, to incorporate advanced information, such as knowledge of future index rebalancing events, to improve the accuracy of stock volume forecasts, both in the short and long term.
Let's dive in and explore the details of this innovative approach. The researchers start by highlighting the limitations of traditional linear time series models when it comes to forecasting stock volumes.
Exactly. Unlike stock prices, which can often be reasonably modeled as trend stationary, stock volumes are heavily influenced by unpredictable events and shocks, making them much harder to forecast accurately using standard techniques.
The key innovation here is the use of a CVAE, which allows the researchers to capture the complex, nonlinear relationships between stock volumes and the various factors that influence them, including this advanced information.
The CVAE architecture consists of an encoder that maps the input data, including the advanced information, into a latent space, and a decoder that generates the forecasted stock volume time series from this latent representation.
By conditioning the latent space on the advanced information, the CVAE is able to generate nonlinear forecasts that better capture the true dynamics of the stock volume data, compared to traditional linear models.
The researchers demonstrate the power of this approach through extensive experiments on real-world stock data. They show that the CVAE-based forecasts significantly outperform linear benchmarks in terms of accuracy, especially for longer-term forecasts.
What I found particularly fascinating is how the researchers were able to leverage the CVAE's generative capabilities to not only produce point forecasts, but also generate entire scenarios of potential future stock volume trajectories.
Absolutely. This scenario generation aspect is a really compelling feature of the CVAE approach. It allows analysts to explore a range of possible outcomes rather than just a single predicted value, which can be invaluable for risk management and decision making.
And the researchers don't stop there. They also delve into the intriguing question of non-stationarity in stock volume time series, and how the CVAE forecasts can shed light on these complex dynamics.
Yes, the paper raises some thought-provoking points about the limitations of traditional assumptions of stationarity, and how the CVAE's ability to capture nonlinear relationships can unlock new insights into the underlying drivers of stock volume behavior.
Overall, this paper represents a significant advancement in the field of time series forecasting, with important implications for the financial industry. The researchers have demonstrated the power of deep learning techniques, like the CVAE, to tackle complex, real-world problems in a creative and impactful way.
I agree, Tom. This is exactly the kind of cutting-edge research that we love to explore on this podcast. The combination of technical rigor, practical relevance, and compelling storytelling is truly impressive.
Absolutely. And I'm sure our listeners are just as fascinated by this work as we are. What did you find most interesting or surprising about the researchers' approach and findings, Jen?
Well, I was really struck by the way they were able to incorporate this advanced information into the forecasting model. The idea of using knowledge about future events, like index rebalancings, to improve long-term predictions, is such an elegant and powerful concept.
Yes, that's a great point. It's a prime example of how thinking creatively about the available data can lead to significant performance gains. And the fact that they were able to do this in a nonlinear, generative framework is even more impressive.
Exactly. The CVAE architecture really allows them to go beyond the limitations of traditional linear models and capture the true complexity of stock volume dynamics. I'm particularly intrigued by the potential applications in derivative pricing and risk management that they mentioned.
Me too. This research has so many fascinating implications across the finance industry. I can see how these CVAE-based forecasts could revolutionize the way traders, portfolio managers, and regulators approach market analysis and decision-making.
Absolutely. And I think it also speaks to the broader potential of deep learning techniques to transform fields like economics and finance, where complex, nonlinear relationships are the norm rather than the exception.
Definitely. This paper is a great example of how cutting-edge machine learning can be leveraged to tackle real-world challenges in innovative ways. I'm really excited to see what other breakthroughs come out of this intersection of finance and AI.
Me too, Tom. This is such a rich area of research, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to discuss more fascinating papers like this one in the future. For now, let's leave our listeners with the key takeaways from this study.
Okay, great. In summary, the main highlights of this paper are the use of a conditional variational autoencoder, CVAE, to incorporate advanced information and improve the accuracy of stock volume forecasts, the ability of the CVAE to capture complex, nonlinear relationships that traditional linear models struggle with, the powerful scenario generation capabilities of the CVAE, which can aid in risk management and decision-making, the insights the CVAE provides into the non-stationary nature of stock volume time series.
Exactly. This research pushes the boundaries of what's possible in financial time series forecasting, and it really showcases the transformative potential of deep learning techniques. I can't wait to see what other innovative applications emerge in this space.
Me neither, Jen. This has been a fascinating deep dive into a cutting-edge piece of research. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Ominous music plays. Are you tired of unpredictable stock market volatility ruining your financial plans?
Introducing Scenario Surety, the revolutionary stock volume forecasting service, powered by conditional variational autoencoders.
With Scenario Surety, you'll never be caught off guard by surprise trading volume spikes or dips again.
Our advanced AI models don't just give you a single forecast. We generate entire trajectories of potential future volume scenarios, so you can plan for any eventuality.
Want to know how index rebalancings might impact your portfolio? Scenario Surety has you covered.
Tired of relying on outdated linear models? Experience the power of deep learning to unlock the true complexity of stock volume dynamics.
Scenario Surety, because your financial future shouldn't be left to chance. Ominous music intensifies.
Scenario Surety, forecasting the future, controlling the present. Both. Sign up now at scenariosurety.com.